Hello there, I'm Chris Difford and welcome to the podcast I never thought it would happen, made in collaboration with the wonderful charity Help Musicians. I'm delighted to say that I'm about to be joined by the son of rock royalty. Like his dad, he started out wanting to play the drums. But since then, he's mastered pretty much every instrument, which is really annoying. In fact, he joined his dad and his uncle's band playing the bass aged just 16. That's quite an incredible thing. Today he has his own band called Mammoth. He has two albums out which he's played absolutely everything. And I've never really listened to his music before today, and now I'm completely in love with it. His dad is Eddie, his uncle is Alex. My guest is none other than Wolfgang Van Halen.
Alrighty, hello.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, and can see you, Wolf. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is for Help Musicians, which is a UK charity. I think there's one in America called Music Support, which is part of the... I don't know what it is, actually. It's part of something over there, anyway. So, how's your day going?
Oh, it's going really well. Yeah, just... turning the machine back on, getting ready to go on tour again for the first time this year. It's nice to get back.
Yeah. Are you comfortable on a tour bus? I struggle some of the time.
I mean, it depends on the amount of people in it. I think being a fresh new band with 12 sweaty dudes
oh, no.
is not really, you know, a place that you can be on your own except your bunk. But I do love the bus because it's the one constant environment when you're traveling, that it's nice to kind of feel like you have a little home while you're on the road.
Yeah. What's your first memory of a tour bus?
It would have to be in 2007 on the first Van Halen tour I was ever on. I know before that, anytime I had visited my dad, Van Halen, prior, they would always fly.
Oh.
For 2007, it was like, let's do buses. And I was excited because I'd never done anything like that before. And it was a really... really cool experience. I've always liked it, and I've also met some wonderful people. The bus drivers I've had over the years, I keep in contact with and are very good friends.
Yeah, I do too, actually. They're fascinating people, and how they can stay awake at that many hours just freaks me out.
It's a crazy job. You know, they have our life in our hands, bus drivers.
Yeah.
I feel like don't get enough credit for how important they are to the industry. They are wonderful people, and they are incredible at their jobs.
And they're getting hard to find.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tough industry.
Yeah. So do you have any sort of well-being within the structure of the band and the touring, or do you just let everybody run their own ship?
I think it's funny. I think everything I've been a part of musically, band-wise, throughout my life has sort of informed the way Mammoth has grown from its inception, which is, I guess if there's two rules that we follow, it's be on time and don't be a dick. I think if you follow those two rules and you treat everybody with respect and you're just there to have a good time, play some music, and at the end of the day, you're all buds, I think that's all that matters. And I think the environment that we have cultivated with Mammoth and everybody orbiting it via management or label, from band members to crew. We just have a wonderful family that it's such a joy to travel with and to do what we do all together.
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of sometimes in the past, anyway, when I was younger, I struggled on the road because there was a lot of drink, there was a lot of drugs in the earlier days. Thankfully, all that's kind of slipped to one side now, but it was pretty rough. I remember once upon a time we toured with Elvis Costello and there was like two bands on one bus.
Wow.
It was murder.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's where my past informing me on how I'd want my future to be in terms of witnessing, you know, my father's addiction and drinking in general. And it's like, we're all very cognizant and aware and comfortable around each other, that we really never take anything overboard. I personally don't drink or smoke or anything, but you know, some of the band dudes will smoke weed, and like that's cool. You know, some people have a drink. Yeah. You know, if we got a roadie Friday, as we call it, you know, if we got a you know, another day off after a show, it's like, yeah, sure, have a drink. You know, let's chill. You know, it's you know, all in moderation and in respect for the people you're living with, because you're all sharing a space.
Yeah. How was your father's addiction? Was it fierce? Was it bearable?
I think growing up, witnessing and being around it, I was a bit naive to the severity of it.
Yeah.
Until I became kind of age to really understand around, you know, my early teens and being around his struggles when I joined Van Halen. I think that was one of the big things of me being in the band, was there as his support system. Yeah. You know, addiction is a disease, and it's a very awful one. It really had a strong hold on him, but he got through it, and I was very proud of the way he got out of it.
That's incredible. And did he have a mentor?
Not really. I think the strongest thing he may have had in the likeness of something like a mentor was maybe our relationship. And I think his desire to get clean was to be with me and to enjoy making music with me and finding joy in that, instead of the very notable drama that I think Van Halen was famous for over the years.
That's a beautiful connection you have with your father there. It reminds me of myself and my son. He's not a musician, but he's been on the road with us, and he's in recovery now. And you know, that's a fantastic connection, father-son thing.
Absolutely. I miss it. I miss him every day. I think he'd be really stoked about everything going on with Mammoth right now. I just wish I could share it with him.
Oh. So when you were growing up, when I was growing up, for instance, there was a real sort of tendency for people to like have favorite drummers, favorite bass players, favorite guitar players. Less so now, I think. You know, I don't think that is as prevalent as it used to be. But, you know, like when I was growing up, I suppose I would always try and pick a drummer and say, wow, like Keith Moon. I want to be like Keith Moon, you know. Who was one of your early drumming influences?
Certainly, I mean, of the classics growing up and my dad showing me things like AC/DC and Led Zeppelin, John Bonham, I think, will always be, you know, one of the, I mean, the drums wouldn't be the same had he not existed. And I do think my uncle is incredibly underrated. I think if he hadn't been in a band with Eddie Van Halen, people would be much more in awe of how an incredible of a drummer Al is. I think he's very underrated in that respect. And being able to play with him and watch him my whole life has been such a joy. When it comes to more modern players, when I decided to kind of venture out on my own, a big drummer for me growing up was Travis Barker from Blink-182.
Yeah.
I was so enamored with his style and that he seemed to be playing parts rather than beats. It was a really, really cool thing. And then once I discovered Tool and Danny Carey, it kind of skewered to more heavier, progressive sort of side of playing. But yeah, I'd say those, you know, from John Bonham to Travis Barker to Danny Carey are three very important drummers for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good song drummers, what I call song drummers. I mean, people don't rate Ringo Starr particularly as a great drummer, but I don't know why, but he plays the song rather than the drums.
Exactly. Yeah, he plays for the part, and I think that's, I mean... That's why he is the legend that he is. People should give him more credit.
That's true enough, yeah. Speaking of Elvis Costello just then, Pete Thomas, his drummer, when we were working with him, the first thing he asked for was the lyrics of the album we were making. And I've never heard a drummer ask for the lyrics. It's kind of really cute.
I love that, having a pulse on everything. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he wanted to get right in the deep end.
That's a dedicated musician. I love that.
Were you ever interested in any other genres of music? Because you were pretty sort of surrounded by a pretty heavy sound, I guess.
Yeah, I think I've always, you know, my interests have always lied in rock and hard rock and certainly metal over the years. But I think I always loved what my dad would say when it comes to, I think people like to talk guilty pleasures and like, oh, you know what do you listen to that you maybe feel a little guilty for? And it's like, I don't think you should ever feel guilty. I think if it sounds good, it is good. You know, I think lately I've actually been getting into synthwave, and it's a very comfy sort of pop vibe. There's this band called The Midnight that there's this one song with this awesome saxophone solo. There's goodness in everything. Even if it's not in my usual wheelhouse of hard rock interests, anything that sounds good is good.
Yeah. So you had a pretty large record collection, I guess, then.
Yeah, certainly. I always make sure, even in this day and age of streaming, to buy whatever I'm listening to, you know, at the very least, you know, that's the best way to support an artist is to buy physical media or like direct merch from them, you know. So I'm very much appreciative and knowledgeable of what it takes to make an album and to release it. And I don't think a lot of people understand the effort that goes into something like that.
Yeah. And of course, when your father was growing up and becoming a musician in the band, he didn't have to deal with social media. That was something the kind of record company had to deal with, but it wasn't called social media. It was called the fan club.
Yeah.
Is that something that you take a lot of notice of?
It's certainly an unfortunate reality of our business. Mm. And it's a thing that I probably wouldn't be dealing with if my job wasn't what it was. Mm. You know, when I'm off tour and have nothing to talk about or nothing that I'm doing that is interesting in the music world, I really take a break and I don't go on it. But if I'm on tour, you know, you kind of have to feed that machine, post pictures of the shows, post the tour dates, you know, post you playing a solo, post music. It's important to feed the dreaded algorithm in order to succeed to a certain extent. But yeah, social media has certainly, I think, negatively impacted the way the human race interacts with one another. It's not the best.
It's not the best, no. And some people really overstay their welcome, I think, you know.
Absolutely. There's plenty of people who are terminally online. I think it's very important to take a step back every now and then and
refresh.
Touch grass, as Gen Z says.
What sort of music was your mother into?
She very much floated in that same space. I know she growing up, she was always into the more, I would always play my music and stuff. Also had a lot of shared interests between both of my parents. Like we would listen to Peter Gabriel a lot. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I remember growing up and she was very much that, mom listening to, you know, from anywhere from Sheryl Crow to Michelle Branch and, who are great, you know, see if it's good, it is good. It was, she loves Mammoth and everything I'm doing. She's the biggest fan in the world. If you follow her on social media, I mean, Christ, her social media is Wolfie's mom. So, she couldn't be a more proud mom, and I'm very lucky to have her.
So she's worse than Taylor Swift on social media then.
Oh, she's all about Taylor Swift too. She's all in on that.
Oh God, that's funny. That's very funny. So, what was the kind of first gig you went to that wasn't associated with your family?
That's a big question. I think early on when I was a kid, like elementary school, I remember going to a Britney Spears concert because I had a crush on her.
Of course.
And then when I got to the concert, I happened to randomly be sitting next to two girls from my first grade class. And I was horrendously embarrassed. They would make fun of me at school the next day. But when it comes to seeing like a band I was really invested in, I remember in middle school going to see The Hives at at the Wiltern. And they still, to this day, they just put out an incredible album end of last year. They are a favorite live band of mine from them to, let's see, I remember I saw the White Stripes with a bunch of friends in middle school. Mm-hmm. You know, you get with your friends and you share, oh, let's go, and, you know, seeing Tool and System of a Down and stuff like that.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, that's so informative too. Even seeing Britney Spears would have been informative in some kind of fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always something to learn at every show. It's very fascinating to see.
Yeah. like, I don't want to be like Britney Spears, I suppose. That would be the thing you'd come
up with.
You
can always learn something, absolutely. What you want to do, what you don't want to do.
I'm Sid Goldsmith, and I'm proud to be one of the thousands of artists supported by Help Musicians. I'm a singer and multi-instrumentalist, working mainly in folk music and based in Bristol. My first intro to being a musician was the guitar phenomenon. I think when I was a teenager, everyone wanted to be the guitarist. It was the time of grunge music, and I was really into all of that stuff. But then really I started taking it seriously when I came across folk music. And then just by chance, a folk club moved into my local pub, and I got a job there as a sound engineer because I had a bit of gear. So I ended up doing sound for some of the absolute greats of the scene, you know, Vin Garbutt and Martin Carthy, Nanty Kerr, James Fagan. But really, just by exposure to it, hearing the stories and the difficult issues that people were talking about on stage, and hearing people sing through these things together, really gave me this sense of community and this sense that you could do something that felt important and people could still go home feeling good about having a nice evening out. There's a lovely tradition of one person and their guitar going around the folk clubs and, you know, the travelling troubadour. But really, for me, that wasn't the thing. I've always wanted to play with others. And even if you are doing the solo thing in the folk clubs, you're joined by everyone in the audience, whether you want it or not. There's this lovely culture of singing along, and it's a lovely community. It seems like a lot of the people who are folk music fans and concert goers are players to some extent themselves, so they understand the lore of the music and the history and the tradition and the importance of keeping it alive and changing it where necessary to keep it relevant. We'll be on tour with my trio Taran in the next few months, and we'll be releasing our second album this year called Outside Time. That feels like a really personal expression. There's three of us really chatting about our way of being in the world, and every time you release something as a musician, you just really hope that it touches people and it connects and it justifies what you spend all of your time doing. There's not one particular high point for me. Really, the first thing that comes to mind is the connections with audiences. That's really what I'm in it for and what I love about it. With my duo partner Jimmy Aldridge, we've had several concerts at Fire in the Mountain Festival in Wales, where it's really felt like the content of the music is speaking to the right people at the right moment. We've left the stage and people have continued singing the chorus to a song, and it's just felt like it's validated everything we've done. And then occasionally you get these bits of industry recognition, like we had Guardian Reviews Songlines Top of the World album. We were voted number one climate conscious artists by Songlines, and we're nominated for a folk award. And all of this stuff is important to not rely on and not need, but it's lovely when it comes. There's so many challenges to being a musician now. It's tiring. It's a very low income for most of us. We're all running our own business. There's so much more to it than just playing music now. There's financial insecurity. Also, venues are disappearing at the moment. Funding is being cut. Gig fees don't really cover it. The record industry is broken, as ruled by the government in their investigation. Yeah, it's a very difficult environment. I often ask myself why I stay in it, and I'm constantly questioning whether I should be still in it and whether it's healthy for me. But then it feels so important. I think it really, really enriches people's lives, and I hear that all the time when I'm out on tour, and it justifies the whole thing for me, or it still has until now. I'm not saying that I will be able to do it forever, because it does take a toll. My first experience with Help Musicians was through the Hearing Health Scheme, so I got a hearing test. I'm a producer as well, so that was really helpful to know where the gaps are in my hearing. And then I got a set of earplugs, which I think that was probably about 15 years ago, and I've still got them and they're great. So that's a brilliant scheme. But since then, I've also had help. During the pandemic, I got a COVID support payment, there was a payment of £500 and it was so easy to apply for. And I was living in a house of 8 musicians at that time. And it was the difference between eating and not really at that point, because we'd all lost our work. I was really struggling with my mental health through loss of work and really questioning identity, relationships breaking down, and Help Musicians paid for 10 sessions of one-to-one therapy. I'd been trying to access that kind of help through the NHS for years, and I love the NHS, but it's very, very difficult to get through that system, so I was so grateful for that. The only hoop that I had to jump through was to go and have a BAPAM assessment to check if they thought I would benefit from therapy sessions. And within a couple of weeks, I had the email to say that I'd been approved for funding for 10 sessions. And I learnt a lot about myself, and I learnt a lot of tools that I can use going forward. And mostly my mental health has been in a much better state since. So yeah, I'm really grateful for that time and those tools. I think music for me really is therapy, and it's the way that I process the way that I'm experiencing the world. There's a lot of empathy and understanding through music. It's a lovely way to interact with other humans and feel understood, feel witnessed by creating something and having it heard. I think there may be an element with that of that musicians have that tool and that other way of processing that maybe some people don't, that maybe is also a barrier to seeking outside help, just because we have this extra way. But that doesn't mean that you don't need other help. It feels like Help Musicians are good at getting the word out that this is a thing available to you. It's so important.
Help Musicians is a charity for working musicians across the UK. To find out more about the support they offer, why they do what they do, and how to support them in creating a world where musicians can thrive, visit helpmusicians.org.uk or find them on social media today.
You know, when you're making records, do you trust the production, the way that it works?
I have a very good relationship with my producer, Elvis Beskett, and our engineer, Jeff Mall. We're practically, they're practically the other half of what the band is. Because if you're unfamiliar, I play all the instruments and write everything for Mammoth. And so while I can fully focus on that, the production aspect and the recording, the complications, you know, we record to tape for drums and guitar because, you know, I use my father's studio, 5150. All the tape machines are there and ready to go. So it's like, why don't we use it? But yeah, because of their high skill and my trust in them, there's really nothing to doubt or worry about when it comes to the production of Mammoth. They are a wonderful team, and I'm very lucky to have them.
So you're like Todd Rundgren, I guess, in there recording all the parts yourself, but like, you know, sharing it with a producer and an engineer. That's a great thing.
It's very fun. You know, we're very tight, and it's just kind of like hanging out with your friends. And then before you know it, a month later, you have an album.
But if you're doing all of the instrumentation yourself, do you ever get pissed off with your parts?
No, because I guess I would be the one to blame. I think, there's obvious frustration. Some days you're not feeling it. But I think that's the wonderful thing about doing it yourself, is that's like, if this isn't working, let's just do another thing and come back to it. You know, usually, you know, we track all the drums and track all the bass and the guitars. And then when we get to vocals, it's like one day can be a vocal day and the next day we can take a break to write and then record guitar solos or overdubs and stuff. So there's always that ability to kind of fill one cup when you're not in the mood to fill the other.
Yeah, I know. And then you put a record together and then you see who comes to snap it up.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to, that's the fun duality of Mammoth, is that, you know, I have a live band of really great friends and musicians to perform and reinterpret the music live, but also having, you know, my fun artistic expression in the studio. It's a really fun duality.
And do you co-write at all?
I have yet to, other than, you know, collaborating with my producer and him kind of help guide me in the right direction. I have yet to do that. I think the closest thing I've ever come to co-writing was working with Mark Ronson on the Barbie soundtrack.
Wow.
Yeah, he invited me in because he wanted me to play guitar on some stuff, and him and Andrew, his writing partner, they are wonderful dudes.
Mm.
But I mean, granted, it was all their ideas, but it's the closest thing I'd ever come to like an unfamiliar collaborative effort, and it was a really good time. They're wonderful guys.
You were lucky to work with Mark. He's an incredibly talented young man, and you know, the stuff that he did with Amy was just an incredible thing. And the Barbie soundtrack, I mean, I haven't really heard it all, but it sounds amazing.
Well, if you see the movie, and in the moment where Ryan Gosling rips out his abs and you hear a tapping guitar solo, that's me.
Excellent. Is there another artist that you would say, you know, like to write with or for even?
Oh, man, I have no idea. I would really love to collaborate with my really good friend. He sings for Alter Bridge and for Slash, Miles Kennedy. I think he is a wonderful human being and an incredibly talented singer and guitar player. So I would jump at an opportunity to collaborate with him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It would also be fun to collaborate with one of my biggest inspirations, Dave Grohl. I'm basically ripping him off with Mammoth and the way that he started with Foo Fighters, recording everything himself. I've kind of modeled the way Mammoth exists because of him. So if he didn't exist, I wouldn't be where I was.
I'm sure he'd come work with you at the drop of a hat.
He's a wonderful dude. We're going to be opening for them this year, the Foo Fighters, which is crazy. I'm kind of waiting to be woken up because it all feels like a dream.
Yeah, I went to see them last year a couple of times, and it's probably the best gig I've seen since The Who.
They're unreal.
His dedication to being Dave Grohl is just 100%. It's just amazing.
Yeah, he wears the badge proudly. He's our gold star of everything that we aspire to be.
You know, he made me cry actually, because we were doing a festival in Kansas a couple of years ago, and suddenly I felt the drum pattern of the song we were playing changed. And when I looked around, Dave had got on the drum kit and knocked our drummer off the stool and just played along like it was the original drummer, you know. And it was just like, my
wow.
God. Could you imagine? It was just like, what is going on?
That's amazing. He's the best.
So co-writing then is something that you haven't really done, but it's something that you kind of would find a challenge, or
that's uncharted waters. And you know, being the self-conscious, full of self-doubt sort of dude I am, I would be very trepidatious and scared to do that. But if it was somebody I was comfortable with, like Miles or Mr. Grohl, it would be a very exciting thing to try.
What would you be scared of, do you think?
I don't know. I think I'm just a very anxious person.
Oh, yeah.
Any new situation gives me anxiety.
I think you'd be really good. You seem very open to me.
Thank you very much. I'd love to try.
Yeah. So you have a sparring partner when you play your music. Who is that person?
I mean, the closest thing to that would be Elvis Basquette, my producer. He's the one I bounce off all my ideas to, and if he's like, yeah, this is great, keep digging, or it's like, this one needs a little bit of work, and he's really that person that I can share everything with musically and expect an honest opinion. And I think that's why Mammoth has been able to work the way it has, is because of our relationship.
That's cool. What do you think of AI in the music industry?
I think it's really stupid. I think AI, at least from a generative perspective, only exists because we do. It wouldn't be able to do what it does without input from us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in a creative space, sure, there are some applications. But when it comes to just like generative, I feel like we should be using AI to take over jobs that aren't creative, that can handle things. But when it comes to the human brain and human creativity, we're unmatched. I think the only reason anybody's giving it any weight is because it wouldn't exist without us. They're not creating something new or fresh. It's just kind of reinterpreting what we have given it, and it kind of spits out a mishmash of what we are.
Yeah, it's kind of scary that it's creeping into politics now as well, I think.
Well, first we need some strong regulations on what is. It's nice to see, I believe, I think was it like one company was like adding some sort of watermark to anything that has been permanently AI'd or is a generative thing and not real. But yeah, it is a very scary thing. We're going to need to figure out how to deal with it because it's terrifying.
Yeah. The UK, have you been here very often?
I've been there a few times, and I will be going back there this year. We'll be opening for Slash.
Oh, wow. I saw them play at Glastonbury.
Yeah. Frank Sidoris, the guitar player with the really long hair, that really handsome dude, he's in my band as well. He's going to be pulling double duty. It'll be really fun.
I couldn't believe they played for like 2 hours nonstop.
Oh, they jam a lot. I remember when I saw them, they played Rocket Queen, and I swear they maybe jammed for like 22 minutes in between those songs. A little blues jam explosion in the middle of it. It was pretty fun.
You know, they're not young dudes either, but they kind of get away with it. It's kind of nice to watch.
Yeah, he's got a great... Slash has found a really great band, those conspirators of Todd, Brent, Miles Kennedy, who I was talking about earlier, and Frank. All wonderful dudes and such great players.
Yeah. So will you be coming to Glastonbury, do you hope?
I hope so. I feel like we might be at some point. I'd have to look.
Yeah.
There's so many so many dates up ahead of us.
Really? Does that frighten you?
A little bit, but it's now that, you know, this is our second time around with the second album. It's exciting. It is a bit weird to have your entire year pretty much decided. So now to look at everything new or fresh, it's like, okay, what's 25 going to look like? But I'm very lucky to be in this position, and I'm very grateful. So I'm going to work my ass off and do everything I can to be the best I can.
That's great. What a fantastic attitude that you've got. That's an amazing thing to have. You know, I can share that as well because... You know, I've just been looking at tour dates and it completely freaked me out. I was like, oh my God. This is like from the beginning of August to the end of the year, it's like constant tour bus life. It's
yeah.
Like, no.
It's something to definitely adjust to, but...
But it's kind of what you grow up. It's what else would you be doing? You know, that's kind of what you do.
I wouldn't be doing anything else. I think you look, you know, I've been working since 2015. It was the first time I've made recorded tracks for Mammoth. I've been looking forward to this my whole life, and to finally be here and in this opportunity, I'm damn sure gonna work as hard as I can and to be the best I can be.
Where is home?
Los Angeles.
And do you have any hobbies?
I play a lot of video games on my downtime, and I watch a lot of trashy TV with my wife. I think it's a brilliant way to turn your brain off. When you just really need to decompress. And lately we've been watching, I believe on Paramount Plus, they have every season of Big Brother, which is a really trashy reality show. And it's just wonderful. It's a great way to turn your brain off.
That's a great thing, yeah. What kind of video games do you play? Is that something that you've always done?
Yeah, since I was a young kid, I've always been, you know, Nintendo and you know, now, like, speaking of Frank Sidoris with Slash, we play this game called Apex Legends all the time where it's, like, online and you're in space, like, shooting stuff. And I don't know, it's a good time. It's a fun hobby, I think.
Yeah, that's great. So when you come to the UK... Where are you playing in London?
I can give you that answer really quickly if I look. I believe we're going to be in, I believe, Birmingham, Newcastle, Manchester, Glasgow, and London.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to come along and watch that, I think.
Absolutely, man. Just you can hit Kevin up. We'll hook you up and get everything set.
I'd love to do that. You know, the Help Musicians charity here is a wonderful thing. During lockdown, it gave out over £20 million to struggling musicians who didn't have a pot to piss in or anything and thought the end of the world was coming. So that kind of charity means the world to me. Is it a sort of thing that you think about at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a really dark time. It really did feel like the end of the world for a bit. And personally, it was to a certain extent losing my dad in the midst of it. I'm a changed person from the person I was in 2019.
Yeah.
Some for the better and some much for the worse. But it's nice to begin to start seeing the light on the other side of what seemed like was going to be some infinite darkness. That it's nice to be returning to somewhat of normalcy. I know there's many problems in the world consistently, but when it comes to daily life, it's nice to be back to somewhat of a normal type of thing.
Yeah, it is a scary world. It really is.
Certainly is. I miss being a kid and being naive to all the world's scary things and just being worried about what cartoon to watch next. It was a much better time.
Oh, I know exactly that feeling. I can't watch the news at all. It's just so depressing. But God bless you. Thank you so much for spending your time with me.
A wonderful pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a real gift to my day. Thank you so much.
This has been wonderful. Thank you.
Enjoy life. See you soon.
Yeah, hope to see you soon. Let me know if there's any shows you want to come to, and I'd love to meet you in person.
I'll be in touch with Kevin. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. You take care.
See you now. Bye. My God, what a switched-on bloke he is. Not only has he learned a lot of musicality from people like Dave Grohl, but he's also one of the nicest guys in rock. And if you have a little time, please check out the Mammoth videos. They're quite excellent. If you want to know more about the amazing work of Help Musicians, do them please take a little time to look at their website. Follow them on social media like I do. And please consider donating a little money to the charity. As you hear in every episode, they do incredible work supporting musicians of all types across the UK. They really do change people's lives for the better. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Give Me Sugar production for Help Musicians.